Welcome into the latest installment of the Golf Channel podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray. Pleased to be joined today on the phone by PGA Tour winner Jim Herman, who took the whirlwind trip that every golfer dreams of. You go from playing in an event one week to strolling down Magnolia Lane the next. Jim, thanks for joining us here.
Yeah, no problem, Will. Glad to be on.
Good to have you. Well, as we said, last year you certainly made your mark winning the Shell Houston Open. It was your first victory on the PGA Tour, and it took you right from there straight to Augusta National. Pretty good timing for your first win, but just kind of take me back to the whirlwind of that week and that Sunday and Monday, just getting everything into place.
Yeah, I mean, what a sequence of events. Obviously, holing out on Sunday at the Shell Houston Open. I know my agent was getting phone calls as soon as the last putt had dropped, accepting an invitation for myself. But joking with everyone earlier in the week, I was like, well, why couldn't I win, RBC the following week after Augusta and had a year to plan this? Because it was
a few practice rounds, right?
Such a emotional week, and, I really didn't slow down until the whole thing was over, and really didn't get a great chance to celebrate the win at Houston and everything that went along with it, because you're just thrown right into Augusta National. And so in that respect, it would have been nice to have a little time to enjoy the win in Houston, but my goodness, right into Augusta, Georgia and the Masters, it was just what a feeling. I mean, it was Sunday night, there wasn't much sleeping going on. Obviously, having won a PGA Tour event, but obviously with the upcoming Masters that week, and it was awesome.
I was going to say, was it a bit of a blur, kind of like Will Ferrell in Old School? There you go, from the Sunday making the putt to all of a sudden you wake up Thursday, you're on the first tee at the Masters. Was the in-between go pretty quickly?
Yeah, it did. Unfortunately, it's something that you'd want time to just go slower than it normally does. If I could just go back and enjoy that week, the lead up to it was just something else. Just all the people I met. I came into town on Monday morning, and first person I saw was Billy Payne. So just right into the top dog at the Augusta National. So it was just a great week, and I'm glad my family and friends, a lot of them, were able to come down and enjoy it with me.
Guys always talk about after they get their first win from years of trying, that the next week when they're on the range and you just have your fellow professionals and peers come by and congratulate you and shake your hand, what was that like for you, and was it extra special to have that occur at the range at Augusta National?
Yeah, it was mind-blowing, actually. I mean, obviously I'm a peer of everyone out there. We're all tour professionals. I've been out there 5 years, going in my sixth year now, but obviously you feel like you've joined the other club. You're on tour, but you've joined the winning club, and you're a PGA Tour winner, and you're always going to be that way. And it was a little very humbling, actually, to be there on the practice facility at Augusta National, and the applause that I was getting, and everyone was looking at you. They knew exactly what happened that week prior, and you won the Houston Open to get into Augusta, and going up and down the line, you're trying to just get some practice in, and a lot of your friends that I've been coming along with are coming along congratulating me, and the top stars of the game, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Bubba Watson, I mean, they all stopped and congratulated me, so that was pretty awesome. I mean, everything you would want.
We see a lot of times with guys that they require 2, 3, 4 times near the lead before they're able to get over the hump and get that first PGA Tour win. You're very much on the opposite end of the spectrum. You entered that week in Houston with only a handful of career top 10 finishes. This was really your first real good chance to win, and you were able to convert, holding off Dustin Johnson, Henrik Stenson, Jordan Spieth, among others. So what was the key for you to that Sunday to be able to get that opportunity and take advantage of it and turn it into a victory?
Well, I was on my game. I was playing really well that week, so that obviously helps. You're not going to be in contention if you're not playing well. My other top tens, like you said, I was not in the final group or near the final group. My closest it was second last group in Greensboro the year prior. You know, I had a piece of the lead that week as well. But, yeah, I mean, I was very, very pleased to be in the final group. Obviously, you want to be, you know, you just look at the stats. You know, the winner usually comes out of the final group, so the more you can put yourself into that position, the better odds you have. So, but, yeah, it was quite a feeling being the last group. There's no one going off behind you, and, you know, you're the center of the attention coming down the stretch. I don't know what the difference was versus, you know, some others, other than I just was able to execute. I was able to execute with my short game, obviously, with some key putts, and I was able to keep the ball in play off the tee. I was really driving the ball well that week, but in that golf course, the Golf Club of Houston really sets up well for me. I had a lot of right-to-left holes, and I was very comfortable with them, and especially that last tee shot. It's the hardest one on the golf course, and I was able to just remain calm, and hey, at the end of the day, we've all been growing up and practicing all the balls we hit and all the time we put in or to put ourselves into these positions. And it had been very easy just to whiff one out there into the right bunker and make a routine bogey and lose in a playoff to Henrik. And, you know, we were very aware of that. And this was my time to just step up and let's go win the golf tournament. And I was able to execute.
Now, you're a guy who has been bouncing back and forth over the last few years between the PGA Tour and the Web.com Tour, winning that Shell Houston Open at age 38 for your first career victory. A lot of people will focus on the Masters bid that came with it and the whirlwind that followed, but how important for a player like yourself is the two-year exemption that comes with winning on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, certainly. It just allows you to plan your schedule and know that, that you're going to be out here for a few years, and I was very, you know, I was a very happy person, you know, before Houston. I was having my best year on tour the year prior. I was in my fifth year already on the PGA Tour. I hadn't had the, you know, success that everyone would want, but, I mean, hey, if I never won, I'd still be able to tell my kids I played on the PGA Tour for 5 years or 6 years, however long it would be, and it would have been a nice career for, you know, someone who really wasn't supposed to be on tour. I wasn't a highly rated collegiate player. You know, not many offers for college, and couldn't get out here right away. I got in the club professional business, so to be able to, you know, scrape out a career on the PGA Tour. I played 4 years on the web.com, and this was my fifth year on the PGA Tour. I was pretty happy with where my golfing career had led me. But obviously, we strive for more, and I was able to get some help with my deficiencies the last couple of years, and I was playing some of the best golf of my career, and then I was able to put myself in the position in Houston and come away with a win. But, yeah, obviously now going forward, the scheduling and know that you're going to be on tour for 2 years is great. And just that little bit of confidence that comes with winning is invaluable.
Well, as you mentioned, your path to the PGA Tour, a little more circuitous than others, coming out from the University of Cincinnati, playing on mini tours. You were working, as you said, as a club pro, Trump National, Bedminster, among other places. I know PGA Village as well, down in Port St. Lucie in Florida. So what was that like for you to kind of take a very unique path, and was there ever a point where you just didn't think that you were going to make it onto the PGA Tour?
Oh, yeah. I mean, many, many times you get through, you're at the Q school, and the PGA Tour Q School is a grueling experience, and I'm sure there's only a few people that haven't experienced it at least once. To miss out at second stage every year for 7 years was pretty humbling. And, you just think, all right, this is probably – I'm just not good enough, and the PGA Tour is not in my plan. So after – you know, at least after 4 years of just nonstop golf, mini tours, Monday qualifiers, Q schools, I'd had enough of that kind of grind, and I was getting married, and thought, all right, I can still go to Q school in the fall, but I got to think of another way to provide. And just, you know, I still wanted to be in the golf. I've loved this game since I was started playing at 9. So I just got in the golf business and was an assistant professional, like you said, at the PJ Village in Port St. Lucie, and then got a phone call from a good friend of mine, Mickey Gallagher, that an assistant position was available in New Jersey and at Trump National at Bedminster. And I thought that was a great way to further my career in golf. And just, you know, there was a great future in being a golf professional, especially at a highly rated club like Trump National. And I thought that might be my path, and be a head professional, and the tour would always be there if I could qualify for the PGA Championship through the Class A membership, and just some other ways. But I still left Q school there. I still would attend, in 05, 06, and 07, and then finally I was able to break through it and get to the final stage of Q school in my second year working at Trump National, and I've been playing and touring ever since. So I guess I was always good enough, but it's just that qualifying is so grueling, and you got to be able to keep it together for those three stages and all those rounds of golf. So great story, one that I'm proud of, and I wouldn't change anything about it, because there's been a lot of people along the way that have entered my life through my club professional business and then on tour, and people that have helped me along the way, and I can't thank all of them. They all know who they are, but it's a great story, and I know a lot of people out there have similar ones and their own stories, but that's mine.
Well, you can't scan the news headlines these days without stumbling across the word Trump. Certainly you have a unique relationship with Donald Trump, now President Trump. With your time at Trump National Bedminster, you still sport Trump logos on your bag and on your shirt at PGA Tour events. So what was that relationship like with him before president, even before presidential candidate Trump? And how impactful was he in steering you towards a path in professional golf?
Sure. Well, before, I was just an assistant golf professional at one of his facilities at Trump National Bedminster. And, I'm sure he's had a lot of good players come through, a lot of assistants and head professionals. They're really good. And but I don't know what was different. We played golf early in 2006 in the spring, and I must have made an impression right away, and he was very supportive of me. And after 2 years of playing a lot of golf with him, he's just wondering why I'm still working there and not on tour. And he was just giving me that extra motivation, and I was able to break through finally that in 2007 at that Q school. But he was very supportive of me, helped me financially survive the first 3 years of web.com and the Nationwide Tour at the time, survive out there. It's just money is money is time, so you need all the support you can have. But he's just always been there, a big supporter of mine. Anytime I played well, I would have a note in the mail, or Mickey Gallagher would get it to me, and he'd write a little congratulatory note and on the article and send it to me, and just was a great supporter of mine and a good friend. And obviously our relationship stayed pretty much the same since he was a candidate and now the president of the United States, and we still get together, just not as much. He's obviously got a busier job now, but we did get a chance to play right before Christmas when he was before the inauguration. He invited me to the inauguration that day, and that was quite an honor, and I was very humbled to receive it. And my wife and I really enjoyed our time in Washington in mid January, and I think it'll be the same going forward. Look forward to seeing him this summer, hopefully, and during the Quicken Loans Championship in D.C. So very, very happy for him, very proud of him, and I think he's going to do a great job. So,
All right, so he is a pretty busy guy, and I don't think he's going to listen to this particular podcast. So feel free to use this. We're among friends. Give a fair and honest assessment of President Trump's golf game.
Oh, my goodness. For his age, 70 years old, he's quite a driver of the golf ball, very athletic swing, his own swing. Iron games, he could really use to hit the ball a little bit higher with his irons, but a really low penetrating shot. But his best feature is his putting. Man, anytime you need to make a putt to have the hole or win the hole, he can make a putt. So his putting is by far his biggest strength. And I just think it comes down to his confidence, because he's a very confident person, and he's very confident in his putting, just a great putter.
So the match is on the line. You got a 10-foot putt for par, and you're feeling good about the putter being in his hands, huh?
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
Interesting. A lot of guys, maybe not a lot of guys, but there are certain guys on tour that sometimes fight labels. I know that Justin Thomas went through a year or two basically known as Jordan Spieth's good buddy. Sam Saunders, currently known as Sam Saunders, Arnold Palmer's grandson. Is there any part of you that doesn't want to get pigeonholed as Jim Herman, the Trump guy? Is that a concern at all?
Well, it's definitely been discussed with some of my good friends and all that, but you know, obviously it is what it is, and I, you know, would I be here on the tour without his support? I don't know. If I would have never taken that job at Trump National, obviously I wouldn't be labeled as the as a Trump guy or the guy that worked for Donald Trump. But then would I have gotten there? I don't know that question. We can't go back and do it again. So I don't mind it at all. Obviously, you know, there's a good and a bad with some things. You know, obviously he's polarizing. A lot of people are not happy with everything he does. But, you know, I still go back to my relationship as with Mr. Trump as a friend, and then all the people that I've met and been touched at his golf courses, and a lot of the staff that still remain good friends of mine, and a lot of the members that still remain good friends of mine. So I don't mind that label or anything like that. Obviously, the better I do, the more it comes up with my relationship with him, but that's okay, and I'm fine with that. But, you know, obviously we are our own men. All these others that you've spoken about, you know, they have their own golf games, and, you know, the labels are what they are, the media, and everybody just wants to write a story, and that's the easiest thing for people to write about. But there is a lot more to me, Jim Herman, and just the Trump story, and sometimes it would be nice that it does get out the other way, but I am just fine with it being that Mr. Trump or President Trump is brought up anytime I play well.
Well, here we are. This is the format to peel back the Jim Herman onion, so let's go for it. When you're off and not playing at a PGA Tour event, what are some non-golf interests? How are you spending your time?
Well, unfortunately, I've brought back tamed back a lot of the things I like to do. One thing I used to like to do was bowl, and I know that I can't bowl anymore until my golf career is over, because it just, the threat of injury, it sounds pretty silly.
Really?
Sounds really silly, but I don't really do anything. I'd like to play basketball and just shoot hoops, and I really don't do those things anymore. But bowling was one thing I really liked to do, and I just the threat of injury on my arm. There's no reason to my knee. Sometimes when I'd bowl, my left knee would be a little achy, so I just cut that out, and I got plenty of time to bowl down the road after my golf career is over. But I just like spending time with my family. I've got two little ones. My daughter's 7, Abigail, and my son Andrew's 3, and I know they're all their events, and my daughter swims, and she's in piano. She's into so many things, and my son just can't stand being away from me. So even when I go to the golf course and practice, he's there right there with me. So when I am away from the tournaments, I'm home. I'm just here, a family man, and I enjoy watching all sports, so that's one of my biggest hobbies, probably watching SportsCenter and Golf Channel and Fox Sports 1, just whatever's on. Big fan of my hometown professional sports, the Cincinnati Reds and Cincinnati Bengals and the Cincinnati Bearcats with all their sports. With we've got a really good squad in basketball right now, so looking forward to March Madness. And but I've just been a sports buff my whole life, so anything sports, I'm usually watching it.
All right, so I got to go. Around. I got to go back to this bowling thing here. So are you?
Yeah.
Did you talk to a doctor? Did a medical professional tell you, hey, you need to cool it? Or is this you being proactive and saying, listen, I just can't risk any injury?
It was a little bit of me, no doctor or anything. It was the last time I really bowled was at the nationwide tour, the web.com tour, Utah championship at I forget the name of the golf course, but there was a caddy player caddy bowling tournament on Tuesday night, and I won the tournament with my caddy at the time, won the bowling tournament, and I just know on Thursday morning my arm was not feeling so well. So after bowling five or six games that night on Tuesday, the hangover from it was pretty dramatic, and that was probably the last time I was like, no, I'm gonna drop the bowling for a while. I have plenty of time for that when I retire. But so that was probably the last time that I really bowled.
So what's your reaction then when you see guys like Rory McIlroy getting injured in soccer and other guys get sidelined from non-golf things? Do you feel like more players should be cautious with their non-golf activities, let's say?
Well, to a point, I think to each their own. Everyone has their own choices to make, and you know, obviously, you know, I'm looking to provide for my family, and I've got, as everyone is, but I just know there's certain things out there that I shouldn't do. My wife wants me to go skiing, and I'm just not going to go until my time playing on tour is over, and that's just my personal opinion.
Got to protect the moneymaker.
Yeah, right. I just feel like there's plenty of time for that. There'll be a lot of time to enjoy things with my wife and my children, but like skiing right now is just not going to happen. So, yeah, I think we should all be a little bit more cautious with things. But like I said, you know, everyone to each their own. And you know, if injuries happen, you just got to be able to live with it if that's what the path you want to go down. So, it's easy enough to get injured playing the game of golf, but it would just be I would feel pretty silly if I got injured doing something else, you know, just a leisurely activity.
So you last teed it up at the Honda Classic down at PGA National. The following day, you participated in the Seminole Pro Member. This is a prestigious tournament, but it's not one that the public really has a good grasp on. There's no cameras out at Seminole, but it certainly every year draws a great field of guys coming up from the Honda and teeing it up at one of the more exclusive clubs in the entire country. So what was that like for you to be able to play in that tournament and shed some light on what that experience is for the peons like myself that may never set foot on Seminole?
Sure. Well, it's such a great golf course, the golf club that Donald Ross designed, and just has so much character and the history of all the tour players that have come through there and played there. And they just put on a great event. Mr. Ford is the quintessential professional, and I'm sure he enjoyed himself at Oakmont and Seminole, but he retired from Oakmont and he's going to spend his days at Seminole now, so just at Seminole. But he's got quite a spot, and they put on a great pro-am the following day after the Honda, and everyone is I just feel they put on a great tournament. There's great membership. I've been introduced to a friend now that we've played the last 3 years, and Mr. Jim Tullis, and we've become really good friends outside of that tournament, we played quite a bit of golf together. He's partnered with me at the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am as well, and I just made a great friend out of that tournament. And but yeah, I mean, it's we play a lot of outside pro-ams and things like that for a lot of charities, but this is one that I think just the players really enjoy the golf course and the history of it, and you know, we're right there, so it makes it very easy to go and enjoy the day. And it's kind of like a extra little tour event, seeing if you can get you know, your team across the finish line, low gross or low net. And we played
true,
well.
The
we
true
had a good
fifth
time.
Major, right?
I don't know if it's going that far, but maybe in the pro-am circuit, it's the number one. But it's just a great day. They put on a great event, great lunch, and meet some great people.
There you go. All right, so if I put you in the commissioner's seat for a day, Jay Monahan is on vacation, what is one thing you're going to change about life on tour?
Well, they already do a great job for us, but I was hoping to get voted onto the pack and just, you know, give my two cents.
Now's your chance. Here we are.
About certain things, and here we are. But they do a great job. We're very blessed. We have a great commissioner. We had a great commissioner in Commissioner Fincham, and Jay is stepping in, and he's doing a fabulous job. Only my only concern is just the avenue to the tour through the web.com and the those guys. I've been there and I've been in that category. It's very challenging, and there's just some things that I would like discussed about that category, just to make sure everyone's got a fair shot when they're in it. It's hard enough making it to the tour, but then it just seems like sometimes in that category you're not always getting a fair shake with starts, and that's about it. Everything on tour is fabulous. I've been so honored and blessed, and I'm so proud of myself to make it here, and they do a great job. Obviously, we're the best players in the world, and they've done a really good job putting on a great show. And but just that's my one little area of concern, was making sure the web guys have a fair shake. And
so would you create more spots for the web guys, or do you think that the issue is moving the web guys up a little higher in the pecking order when it comes to filling out fields?
Just making sure that they have a voice and some of their concerns are heard, just along with the top guys. That's all.
Yeah.
And it's you know, when everyone has their chance, but to play and move up in that category. But some guys, you know, they only get one start in about a 12, 13 week stretch, and that seems pretty. That seems too long. Obviously, I don't think that's fair when we're playing. So obviously, there's just got to be something just to even that out a little bit.
All right, I will let you get out on this one. Your Cincinnati Bearcats projected right now to be a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. What is the key to success for UC if they're going to make a long run through the bracket?
Well, obviously, you got to be on. You got to have your guard play in the tournament. It's all guard play. We've got some really good players there, but Mr. Copain is our star. And if they're shooting the ball well, I think we got a chance. So we play really good defense, but it always comes down to making shots. So our guards need to make the shots when you know, you're in that tight game, and then obviously free throws. So unfortunately, that was never our calling card, was our free throw shooting over the years, and that's really been the reason we've never done really well in the NCAA tournament, because you're going to get tight games and you gotta make your free throws. So some three-point shots, clutch three-point shots, and then I always think the free throws. It's like making tour players making your three-footers. You know, if you're missing three-footers, you're not going to be hanging around very long.
See, this is the time, early March. This is when all the teams, it makes it seem like we have a path and everyone has a shot, even though 67 are going to go home disappointed over the next 3 or 4 weeks. But Jim Herman, thank you very much for joining us, teeing it up this week at the Valspar Championship. I know I look forward to catching up with you when you defend that title at the Shell Houston Open coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think I got a media day coming up in a week, and really looking forward to be, you know, obviously everything that goes on that goes into winning, but this will be a couple new experiences, the media day for Houston, Houston Open, and then obviously being on site and just everything that goes along with being a defending champion. So really looking forward to it, and thank you, Will, and you have a nice day.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for joining us. This has been another edition of the Golf Channel Podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray, and we'll see you next time.